How lucky are you, listener? Back on a Monday, the Squawker Talker football podcast returns to an old slot, and it's just for 1 week only. And joining me today on the episode on a Monday, sponsored by BetBull, is chief writer at Squawker, Mohammed Butt. Welcome back, Mo.
100% aerodules won, 5 clearances, 10 recoveries, 4 shots, 2 blocks, 2 interceptions. Guess the player.
Van Dijk.
Christopher Mike Smalling.
Van Dijk Smalling.
Mate, seriously, amazing game. Well done, Chris Smalling.
Looks like Premier League players just need to go to Serie A to rediscover their form.
I mean, clearly.
Mkhitaryan, I think, has been praised since going to Roma as well.
You just go to Roma, mate. That's
just it. Go to Roma, although they're not doing fantastically well, I don't
think. It's a nice city, though.
Nice city. Also joining us, it's a reduced capacity on today's podcast, but makes up for it in his rich content editing. Sam Long, welcome.
How's it going?
Good. It's good.
Feels like we've never been away.
No, it doesn't. Because, what's that, 3 days? And you can still, technically, depending when you listen to this, you can still listen to our Man United Arsenal preview on Thursday's podcast. So if you listen to this when it comes out just before the game, get listening to that. And then this will be... We're sort of doing Champions League previews, but we're being a bit rogue here. We're not doing the actual match stuff. We're picking out a theme from each of the games. I'm going to be looking at specific players and talking about, in general, 7 games into the season. It's not quite a huge sample size, but it's enough for us to have discovered a few interesting thoughts about the players. But first of all, we did have a listener request from Paolo Chicon to talk about, are we finally seeing the Real Odegaard?
Oh yeah, see what you did there.
I was so pleased when I wrote that into the agenda, and I've put like asterisks around it, put it in italics, because Martin Odegaard, no player has created more chances in La Liga this season, and it's someone that's only 3 days older than Kylian Mbappe, which, based on when he was signed by Real Madrid, everyone thought you'd think he's about 24 now. He's still so young, turns 21 in December, and he's taking La Liga by storm, but for Real Sociedad, not Real Madrid.
Yeah.
Has he been the best player in La Liga so far?
I mean, I would give it to his teammate, Mikel Oyarzabal, 4 goals, 2 assists, but I would. He's probably number 2 or number 3. He's been brilliant. He really has. And it's funny, because it turns out Real Madrid, when you play young players, they do well and develop. They signed him as a PR thing. They've admitted it. Carlo Ancelotti's admitted they signed him just because they wanted the PR boon and they wanted the marketing exercises. And they had no plans of how to integrate him, how to use him. They gave him a few training sessions for Cristiano Ronaldo. I thought, this will work. Didn't work. He looked lost. He wasn't playing well for the B team, for Zidane. And so they loaned him out. And it turns out, when you send a player to develop, in a league that does well developing players in the Netherlands, in the Eredivisie, he does well. Played 69 games for Heerenveen and Vitesse. And really came on. Now they've got him back. They sent him out to Real Sociedad. And he's just been brilliant. He really has. What was it? 23 chances created, which is the first, obviously, joint first with Toni Kroos. 8, 3 of them are big. So 3 big chances. that sounds, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then 18 dribbles. He's got 2 assists this season. Wasn't particularly brilliant necessarily against Sevilla.
That was going to say.
He was okay, but he still got an assist in the end.
Just like us, Odegaard's had like 3 games, like our podcast. Yeah. We had Thursday, Monday recording. Yeah, he had Thursday, Sunday games, I think.
Yeah.
And it was his 10 chances created against Alaves that was really sparked into, because I know Sid Lowe was one of the people that said he might be the best player in the league this season.
If you haven't watched the goal or the match, just go look at it, because his assist for IFL is disgusting. He puts a nutmeg on Thomas Pina. I mean, I feel so bad for Thomas Pina. I watched that and I was like, oh poor you.
Yeah.
It's just, and then he caps that off with an incredible through ball.
The pass, I think it literally cut the whole team
in half. That was the most Messi-esque thing I've seen from someone that wasn't Lionel Messi, I think, in years. Mm. It was incredible. He has been really good. And yeah, he's 20 years old, 21 years old. So he's
20, yeah.
He's very young. And he's now coming into the phase of his career where it's like, okay, now we're going to see the real guys. This is, now admittedly, had Madrid or anyone, had he gone to, let's say, Dortmund, then he could be doing Jadon Sancho things. He could be at 17. Mm. He could have been emerging already. But he went to Real Madrid, and that was a mistake. But he paid for that mistake by not, I mean, losing. It sounds ridiculous. He's 20 years old. But essentially, starting at the age of a normal prodigy. Like, do you know what I mean? Like a normal, amazing
player.
But
this is the thing is, yes, he hasn't really done anything for Real Madrid yet. But is it necessarily an incorrect move if now he is developing. And so we've got to the point where we're potentially talking about as one of the best players in La Liga.
Yeah.
So although it's not for Real Madrid, that move technically and then being able to move on loan to other teams, is it as bad as everyone?
Well,
because when he wasn't playing, and there's articles that people have thrown back in our place that were headlined in certain ways or making wrong career moves and stuff like that. Yeah. So wanted to address those and say that necessarily those headlines obviously can be misleading. It was just the fact that Odegaard, he made his Norway debut at 15, so there was an expectation that Real Madrid was a too big a step immediately, but the foundations could be there for him still to have a Real Madrid career. And maybe at the end of it, it has been done right in the sense that he's had two loans outside Europe's top five leagues, as you said. Yeah. For Vitesse last season, he was incredible. Now he's got his loan in the same league as Real Madrid, so can genuinely prove his fit for La Liga. Yeah. And whether after this season, this is the defining one where it decides if he stays and goes to Real Madrid next season or if it might part ways. But he's been allowed to develop and we're seeing his talent now. So,
well, people just develop at different rates, I think, don't they? Just because Madrid have singled him out at 16 for potential, that doesn't necessarily mean he was going to always burst onto the scene at 18. That's just what you assume whenever someone gets picked up when they're really young. You think, oh, when he's 19, he's going to be a world beater. Because everyone just develops at different rates, don't they? So you look at sort of Michael Owen, he was a teen and absolutely on fire, and then sort of fizzled out.
Yeah.
You mentioned Mbappe. The same thing could happen to him.
I'm
not going to sit here and be stupid enough to say that it will happen to Mbappe. But you see, just to make the point that players really do develop at different points. Because another one that I thought of was De Bruyne. So he joined Chelsea when he was 20, so same age as Odegaard.
He had
to take a step back before he came good. So It's not like his career is over.
Real Sociedad could be Martin Odegaard's Wolfsburg and
exactly. Bremen. I think a more apt comparison, given it's La Liga, would be they could be his Espanyol. The way Marco Asensio was emerged at Mallorca, really be a promising young talent. Madrid signed him when he was 18, I think, and then loaned him back to Mallorca and then loaned him out to Espanyol. And he was brilliant. 4 goals, 10 assists in 2015-16. And they brought him to Madrid. And, you know, immediately he looked really, really, really promising and thinking, okay, Madrid, they've got the next big star. And then they didn't really develop him enough. He stayed in this sort of amazing young player mold with this amazing talent that he obviously had. And he had, you saw he did it to Bayern Munich, did it to the Juventus in the Champions League final in 16-17. You're thinking, okay, 17-18 is going to be the year of Asensio. And then it wasn't. He didn't emerge. He was sort of kept on the fringes and it was frustrating. And then now, unfortunately, he's injured.
Yeah. Because he got a bad injury, didn't he, in the pre-season? Yeah.
And it was that's a real, real unfortunate. I hope he recovers soon. But it's just, you know, he ended up being mismanaged. But he did, at first, you're thinking, okay, is Odegaard now going to follow that path? Hopefully not with the injury and everything. But I mean, the initial burst of success onto the scene at Real Madrid, which Asensio had, could Odegaard do that next season after? I don't know. I mean, regarding developing different stages, it's true. Look, he's basically accidented his way into making it a good move, because it was he made a silly mistake, because he was being chased by Barcelona, Dortmund, basically every club in Europe when he was like 16, and he picked Madrid and fine, whatever. But if he had gone, I know it's easy to say now because he has, thankfully, he's managed to right the ship and get himself sorted, but for a long time he looked like he had made a very bad career move, and he's sort of through hard work, his own talent and some judicious loan moves, he's coming good again, because he is that talented. But he could have been doing this like when he was 18. He could have been emerging and destroying teams. He could have been doing what Sancho did. He made the wrong... See, that's where you have to praise, like, for example, Sancho's bravery. Sancho could have stayed on the bench at Man City and he would have been barely featuring. Mm. He went to Dortmund, took a big risk, bet on himself, and he developed. And I think Odegaard would have done the same thing. But whatever, it's what's done.
Yeah, I think
done.
It's tricky because there's no guarantee that if you went to Barcelona,
I would say Dortmund more so than Barcelona at that time, because I think Barcelona were kind of losing their way a little bit.
But then if he was good enough to have played for Real Madrid, then Real Madrid would have played him. It's not like
that you say that, but then a lot of players have been going to play for Real Madrid haven't played him. They've got a weird relationship with young players. It's not always as straightforward as just being good enough, because a lot of players have been good enough and haven't been given the time there. That's all in the past, because he's coming good. He's been sensational. If he plays as well as he looks like he's playing for the whole season, Real Madrid will have him back next year, 100%.
Yeah, they have to play him, or as you said, then maybe he'll get that sort of move to a a tier lower in terms of prestige.
But as we've seen,
it's more exciting to play for teams like that anyway. And you could, as I said, Real Madrid and Barcelona are usually the end game for everyone. But some people have been taking that step down and then returning or going to another level.
Coutinho. Not Coutinho, because he's got to Bayern Munich. Maybe find in the Bundesliga. I think he'd suit the Bundesliga very well. He'd suit anywhere very well. He's a sensational player.
Well, that's
player.
The thing. So he's obviously, I touted him as one of the best players and said, and he's got a pretty strong case. As you mentioned, no player's created more chances. The only player with 15 take-ons and 15 chances created and more final third passes than other players. And in attacking sense, one of the brightest one. I just wanted to mention how good Santi Cazorla has also been at 34 years old with one Achilles tendon, he is also ranking very highly for chances created and take-ons.
And if you watch his performance against Barcelona at the Camp Nou, I mean, Villarreal lost and that was unfortunate, but he was incredible. The way that he dealt with Arthur, who is 11 years younger than him, and outmatched Arthur for periods of the game. Got outmatched as well himself, but he's 34. He was incredible. His goal was outrageous.
Class is permanent, especially when it flows through both feet at equal level.
It's such a good thing as well to see him, because of course, like you said, there was rumors that he's not going to be able to walk again, things like this, and he's really recovered and he's actually playing brilliantly. And it's just so great. And he's such a nice guy.
Yeah. Well, always smiling. So if he ends up being La Liga MVP, that'll be a story for the ages. The final note on this La Liga section was just the fact that whilst we have Liverpool storming the Premier League, La Liga now, Sociedad, so this was when we put the agenda together, it was like, if Real Sociedad beat Sevilla and Odegaard stars, he did get an assist in that game, then it would be even better to talk about because Real Sociedad would be top of the league.
Yeah.
However, Sevilla beat them 3-2, and now you have Real Madrid in first with 15 points, Granada 14 points second, Atletico 14 points, Barcelona 13, Real Sociedad 13, Sevilla 13, Athletic Club de Bilbao 12.
Newly promoted Granada, by the way. They're having a season up. Shout out to the Madrid derby, by the way, which was a really awful game, but Thomas Partey was unreal. Again, if you can go look at the highlights and find it on YouTube, you watch his display. It was the most incredible thing I've ever seen.
And again, we gave it the big hype in our preview and it ended up being 0-0. But just on that as well,
classic.
Real Madrid, 3 clean sheets in a row.
Took Courtois rolling in them.
Ever since we absolutely blasted them on the Score Talker, they've ended up keeping 3 clean sheets and obviously got a draw, but they're top of the Liga and still unbeaten. So it just proves how crazy football can be, especially comparing Champions League and league form. But also, actually moving on from something that was mentioned before in terms of what we've said on the Score Talker and then being proved absolutely wrong, frequent listeners might remember, and we didn't actually say it, but last season, I think it was towards the Champions League knockout stages, and it was maybe Bayern versus Liverpool.
It was, yeah.
We were talking about Robert Lewandowski, who obviously has always scored goals, but we were thinking about, because it was Ribery, Robin as well, being phased out. Also, Ribery proves that he can still do it, beat AC Milan at San Siro, another thing you might miss from the weekend. But we were talking about Lewandowski. Is he starting to wane in terms of output? And will this be the end of it? Because he was moaning about his teammates not giving him enough assists, but was it his fault, etc. So there was a big discussion about Lewandowski, and as none of us said, he's finished. So it wasn't quite that bad. But anything we did said now looks silly, because he started this season and scored 10 goals in 6 Bundesliga games.
And he gave a penalty to Coutinho, so he could have had 11.
The first ever player to score 10 goals in 6 Bundesliga games. Certainly not waning. He's reached 200 goals for Bayern Munich this in his career now. 203 goals in 251 games. He scored 40 goals in the last 4 seasons, and it looks like he's definitely going to get 40 this season based on this start. The biggest game on Tuesday in the Champions League is Spurs versus Bayern Munich, and it's almost a battle of those two classic. Although Harry Kane's been developing his role a bit more and dropping deep, I think we saw the old Harry Kane where they had 10 men against Southampton a bit more. But it was more of a question of, despite us being so silly to ever doubt Robert Lewandowski, has he made the claim again to be sort of the best number 9 in the world? And how does Spurs, who, yes, they got a win against Southampton, but nearly shot themselves in the foot again, do they have any chance of stopping him on Tuesday night?
Well, Lewandowski's definitely shut everyone up with his start to the season. I think the only game he didn't score in was the Super Cup against Dortmund back in August, although he did draw 2 blanks for Poland in there as well, if we're going to nitpick.
Oh yeah, but for Bayern, he's banging them in.
Banging them in, yeah. But it was interesting. After the Super Cup, he came out and was pretty scathing about the club's transfers, said that they needed to sign two or three new players. And at that stage, he was probably entitled to be feeling like he was being hung out to dry a bit, really, with some of the players who were leaving. And that sort of seemed to, anyway, jolt the club's hierarchy
into action,
obviously signing Coutinho. And it's got to the point where Kimmich actually described his goal scoring rate as extreme, which tells you everything you need to know about. Everything he's touching seems to be turning to gold, which is exactly why it's going to be so hard for Spurs to stop him. So I did a bit of digging on his overall Champions League record against English clubs.
Oh, nice.
So he's got 4-8 against Arsenal.
Classic. Everyone's stat pads against Arsenal in the Champions League.
Yeah, absolutely. Look at half of Messi's goals.
Yeah, that bloke Lionel Messi, that's all he built his career on, was 4-1 against Almunia.
And he's got 1-4 against Man City, and then obviously he didn't score against Liverpool in the two games that we mentioned last year.
Literally just Arsenal. Well, he's got a North London club again, so maybe that...
Yeah. In terms of stopping him, one of the most important things that Spurs need to do is keep things tight after half time, because the time frame where the highest percentage of his Champions League goals have come from is between minute 46 and 55, which is a total of 9. And then up next, it's 56 to 65 minutes, where he scored 8 goals in that time. So Spurs, who have been sluggish at times in the last few weeks, need to be right at it.
So he hits the orange slices hard at half time.
Exactly.
Well, what I was going to say is, I know that's Champions League goals, but do you remember when he scored 5 coming on at half time against Wolfsburg, I think, within 9 minutes? So definitely, he must, as you said, Mo, he must be absolutely smashing the oranges.
But in terms of personnel, I think for Spurs, it's got to be Alderweireld and Vertonghen who start. The only choice really that Pochettino has to make there is whether he does bring Sanchez in as well and plays 3 at the back to try and make things a bit more compact in the centre, especially if Lewandowski is going to play up top on his own. Mm. But then on the flip side, with Koeman, Gnabry, Coutinho, the wide areas will be there to be got at probably in a three, because... So Aurier, is Poch going to trust Aurier after the weekend?
He won't be suspended for the Champions League game. But
So he's got the option to bring him in, but then is that really what you want to be doing up against sort of Coutinho? Because him and Lewandowski, it's been really nice to see. They seem to just be really enjoying playing with each other. Mm. I think it was in the week after Coutinho signed, Lewandowski said that his final ball was insane.
Yeah.
And then Coutinho had... pulled out a nice quote where he said that Lewandowski is so much better than you think on TV.
Mm.
And they just seem to be really genuinely enjoying.
Well, this goes back to Mo's point that you made quite a lot about Coutinho, is that when he's the main playmaker, he failed to make that transition, because anyone that goes to Barcelona, you have to cede all creative control to Lionel Messi.
Yep.
And rightly so.
Yeah,
and people have happily done that and turned themselves into goal scorers. And Coutinho didn't quite manage to do it. But now, plonking back in, and the same was with James Rodriguez.
Yep.
On his 2-year loan at Bayern Munich, I know he didn't play a lot of minutes through injuries or just personnel, but when he did play, and when he played in the Bundesliga, he... was just carving teams apart.
When things flow through you, Coutinho and James are very much South American number 10s, classic old school kind of players. Özil is another one like that in that mold.
I was going to say, Özil might be going to Bayern.
You play those players through the middle with a great striker and you surround them with pace, and they just wreck teams, man. And Coutinho, he's playing brilliantly. I mean, and it's good to see, because it was really annoying watching a player that talented be useless at Barcelona. It made no sense. And now it's finally, you're seeing him in his element. He's confident. He's happy. And I tell you what, you mentioned Lewandowski. Spurs need to watch out for Coutinho. He scored at Wembley last year as well and played very well, actually, as well, when Barca won there. So
yeah, that was probably the best thing he did in the Barca show.
Yeah, honestly, probably. That or the Copa del Rey final. So it's going to be, they need to watch out for him. That's going to be great. It's going to be a great game.
Should Bayern be just as scared of Harry Kane? Because he's scored 6 goals Maybe seven now as well. I can't remember which. I lose track of everything, especially doing a podcast on a Monday. I've not had fully time to recalibrate. But Harry Kane has scored goals, which is not a sentence that is surprising. Always scores against Southampton. And as I said, in that game against Southampton, when they were down to 10 men, it almost... Commentators always say, oh, this player's cheating by not tracking back and stuff. And a lot of the discourse around Harry Kane at the moment is that he's dropping really deep, being a playmaker. Against Southampton, it was sort of old Spurs when him, Son and Eriksen scored that counter-attack goal. And that's the Harry Kane that everyone was getting scared of as a number nine. So as sort of just sort of a quick question to put you both on the spot, really, is at the moment, is Lewandowski sort of the leading goal-scoring number nine in Europe again, given this start of the season? Or are there players... So the players I've noted down... I've got like Harry Kane in there, Sergio Aguero, Aubameyang. Could you, although he plays as a wide forward, probably a bit different, but is that sort of goal poacher? And you mentioned those quotes about Coutinho saying about Lewandowski. I don't think until you play with a striker that's so good, you don't see it. You don't see on TV their movement.
I mean,
that's
a damning indictment of Luis Suarez's current state, by the way. That he's like, he's so much better. Like, his movement, and you're thinking, yeah, of course it is. Suarez doesn't know how to move anymore. No, I would agree. Lewandowski is the best number nine in the world. I think he was basically bordering on overthrowing Suarez constantly for like 2-3 years. There was like those two were in deadlock. The Uruguayan has fallen off the pace. Kane is still... I think Kane is like, he's going through a footballing puberty here. He's realizing all these new talents he has, and he's trying to figure out how to use them and how to make them work. Once, you know, I maintain the best Harry Kane we're going to see is when he turns 30 and he knows everything he can do. He has full mastery of his body. He's going to do what Zlatan did and just explode. We're not going to see him really hit his peak until he turns 30. But now.
And that's scary considering he's already absolutely smashing.
Well, he's got
goals.
170 goals in 261 games. So he's like 30 odd goals behind Lewandowski, and he's playing for Spurs, not Bayern Munich. Mm. So. You know, he's remarkable. I think they need to be afraid of him. I think, I think it could be a lot of goals in
this game. They've got a similar sort of style, actually, saying that as well. Because if Trippier was still at Spurs, then they'd very much got like Kimmich, Lewandowski is a deadly combination, and Lewandowski's brilliant in the air. Kimmich is brilliant at crossing. Spurs have maybe lost that crossing ability. They use Eriksen instead. Eriksen and Kane. I couldn't quite finalise it because I don't know if people have overtaken, but Eriksen assisted Kane for the first time in a while at the weekend, and that's now 19 Eriksen to Kane goals in the Premier League, and there's only about four duos that have done 20+. So Kane and Eriksen is genuinely one of the most formidable combos in the Premier League. Mm. So if they actually play together at Bayern... They're going to have similar styles of play of Kimmich crossing to Lewandowski to try and get goals with that movement, or maybe Coutinho and Eriksen. So it's the number 10 and number 9, a classic partnership reborn. And we might see two of them in one game. Lewandowski best at the moment, given this form?
I think given his form, you'd probably say he's the best right now. But if I had the choice, I'd still take Kane and Aguero over Lewandowski.
Aguero forgotten yet again.
Well, no, I did mention him.
I did.
But he got dropped. Pep ruined his chance to break Jamie Vardy's record, because I know he came on and you could... Sergio Aguero strikes me as the person that is actually aware of these records and wants to break them, not in a sort of selfish way, but in a sort of using this as my motivation. And he came on, did that little dribble, spanked it from 25 yards. It was a whisker away. And obviously his streak ends at 7 games consecutively scoring in. Only three players have done 8. It was Van Nistelrooy, Sturridge, and then Vardy's 11, which now gets reset. And Vardy himself looks like he might be in form to sort of try and extend that this year with how Leicester have started. Yeah. But Vardy's probably not up there for best number 9, is he?
No.
Moving away from number nines to now talk about the players they try and score the goals against. Marc-Andre ter Stegen became the first goalkeeper to assist a goal in La Liga this season in Barcelona's most recent win. And with Lionel Messi seemingly fighting injuries, Mo, is there a case to be made that Germany's number two is Barcelona's most important player when Lionel Messi is injured?
Yeah, honestly, yeah. Because if you look at a Barcelona under Ernesto Valverde, right, there's been the spine of the team is basically the most important element of it, right? So you have Messi, obviously, as the number 10, Suarez to a degree, Rakitic to a degree are sort of cameo members in this. But there are four players, essentially, that have been brilliant from start to finish under Valverde. Suarez and Rakitic have had their moments. Messi, Busquets, Piqué, and then Ter Stegen. So any one of those four, you could argue, is their most important. Ter Stegen is huge. He's a colossal figure, and we don't really think of him as one of the best goalkeepers in all. People don't, partly, I suppose, because he's, for some reason, people don't view him as superior to Neuer, even though he's been better than Neuer, like, for years now. I mean, he was chasing Neuer down before Neuer got injured, and then Neuer got injured, and since then, it's not been a contest.
That Neuer injury should have been the moment where it was switched.
And it was they brought him back straight away. I guess because he's captain, I can see why they did that. But at the same time, Ter Stegen was much better. The World Cup would have gone a whole lot better with Ter Stegen in goal than Neuer. They wouldn't have got dumped out in the group stages, but whatever. Early Hernes can make all the threats he wants.
Yeah, I think he had to get his team to pull those sort of quotes, didn't he? That was the response. Ollie Hernes' office said they were emotive comments, and he did not mean them. But
well, I mean, because they can't mean them, because people be like,
you can't do it.
Look, Ter Stegen is incredible. He's not as physically dominant or physically imposing as some goalkeepers, because he's not like massive. He's not like Courtois size or Alisson. Those guys are just hulks. But he's really, really good across his line. He's a great goal. He's a great goalie in terms of reaction saves. He makes good catches. He's incredible 1v1. He seems to have been there. I don't know who Barca's goalie coach is or what has been at the coach, because Victor Valdes, the previous Barcelona goalkeeper, was also amazing at 1v1s. I don't know what it is there, but Ter Stegen excels 1v1. I mean, they got a 1v1. He made a great stop from Angel at the weekend.
That's probably born out of the fact that when you're a more dominant team, you're not so... When you're a Burnley goalkeeper, you probably train a lot in collecting crosses and sort of shots from distance through a lot of bodies. Whereas when you're Barcelona, the line that you play, a lot of the situations that teams are going to create against you are going to be in those situations where you're clean through or it's 3v3s and it's sort of more down to you.
And then he's amazing with the ball at his feet. He's unreal with the ball at his feet. And I know, and it's quite funny because obviously now the Premier League has been sort of woken to this because of Guardiola and because of particularly Edison. We've seen that, goalies can be amazing. Like, because everyone used to think De Gea was really good with his feet. It's like, no, he's okay. He's like, but there's a level above him, and we're seeing that Edison is like that. Ter Stegen is incredible. He's two-footed, genuinely seems to be two-footed. Flicks the ball out to either feet. Supreme confidence, even when he makes a mistake. And the assist at the weekend was just magical. He runs out. It's a long ball in behind Longley, because that's how you beat Longley all the time. He comes out. He sweeps, you know, for the defence. He chests the ball up, past the striker. Poor Angel again. and then he just looks downfield and then he hits this thing with his left foot, his weaker foot, pings an absolutely perfect pass over the defence, so perfect that even Luis Suarez, who can't really do anything, could run onto it easily. And I mean, and credit to Suarez, very nice little lifted finish over there. Sorry,
at all at the moment.
It was a sensational bit of goalkeeping. And yeah, no, he made some massive
saves.
Well,
they're Inter now in the Champions League. Their group is tough. They got the 0-0 against Dortmund away from
home,
which that's what I mean. Retrospectively, probably happy with that point away to Dortmund, given the chances that Dortmund had. Yeah. The penalty save, which, yes, he may have been off his line, but the actual save and then the way he collected it afterwards,
it was ridiculous.
Absolute pure nonchalance.
Yeah.
An excuse to use that word, I think, with Ter Stegen all the time. So, potentially Barcelona's most important player when Messi doesn't play, given how... Barcelona look.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, just look at last season in the Champions League, even when Messi was playing, right? It was until, Alisson walked away with the UEFA Best Men's Goalkeeper, and rightly so, because of his performance in the final particularly. But you look at it, until that game, I mean, even actually with the disaster of Anfield, which is they conceded four goals, he had seven clean sheets, which is the most. He had nine goals conceded, which is the least. Until Anfield, he had conceded five goals in the whole competition.
I remember when they kept the clean sheet at Camp Nou.
Yeah.
He hasn't... Only like Elneny and another player are the only people to score against Ter Stegen at Camp Nou in the Champions League for Barcelona. And Elneny is now on loan in Turkey. So it's a select group. And Barcelona welcome Inter Milan.
It's going to be a
goalie
duel though, isn't it? With Handanovic.
Well, that's the thing is, I was going to focus on Inter Milan have obviously made this perfect start in Serie A. They're top of the league, and it's only the second time in history they've won the first six games. So Antonio Conte is definitely
doing Antonio Conte things.
And even Alexis Sanchez's debut was a comedy, really, because he thought he had two goals in the first 22 minutes, which is more than he managed in the Premier League last season.
Yeah.
And then one of them was taken away despite it actually hitting him.
Yeah, that was weird, right? I still think it should be his goal. That's clearly
anyway,
his goal.
I think it got taken away. Sensi, who has been sensational for Inter Milan, hitting it to Sanchez twice through shots of his own.
Yeah.
And then Sanchez was sent off for a second yellow card of diving. So an absolute chaotic full Serie A debut, but yeah. Again, just with this, everything Conte's touching at Inter Milan in Serie A is turning to gold. Obviously, they struggled in their first game, and Barcelona have that incredible unbeaten streak at Camp Nou in Champions League, which is the longest in history.
Six years, they haven't lost since May 2013 against Bayern Munich.
Yeah, it's 30 plus games, so it's a tough ask, but it will, in my head, this game will be decided by the two goalkeepers, because we saw it in the first leg, and Ter Stegen and Inter Milan will create some chances. We had a mention as well to mention Brozovic's sort of transformation into this deep role has been obscene for Conte's Inter Milan.
Yeah, that's going to be fun to watch, Brozovic and Sensi combating Barca's midfield, because of all the units that are askew and awry, Busquets to Arthur and Di Frenkie is one hell of a midfield. So that's going to be fun to watch, because I think Brozovic could give them, Brozovic and Sensi have been really good, and with the energy that Inter play with, could give them a hell of a game. Godin obviously has always done well at the Camp Nou, if they can bring him in there. And Lukaku obviously will want his chance, because obviously he was upset about Rashford missing chances when Man United went to the Camp Nou. He'll want to prove that he could have done differently.
There's
Alexis Sanchez back to his old club.
You know. Well, of course, yeah. Like Aurier, we mentioned for Spurs, he won't be suspended for this, so he could have a little cameo role.
Suarez is going to start because Ansu's injured and Dembele's 100% fit. So.
But at least it's at home for Suarez. Yeah,
that's true.
And if Inter gets something, though, it'll really throw Group F wide open again, won't it?
Well, it's just all draws, depending on what Dortmund result is as well.
Dortmund, you think a win, right? You'd imagine. That's what I mean.
Inter Milan missed the opportunity to sort of get an early lead
you're
in the group.
Yeah, banker beat them.
Away from home, you'd say, yeah, they should have won Inter Milan to have a chance of this group. But Handanovic will be, when we were speaking about this and sort of discussing the goalkeepers, you've got Ter Stegen, and you mentioned all of those qualities about chesting it out at the edge of his area and putting a weak foot assist onto Suarez's plate. Handanovic is probably one of the most underrated goalkeepers in Europe, purely because he's more in the Oblak mold of goalkeepers, in the sense that he doesn't just make saves, but that's what it feels like. In Serie A this season, his save percentage is 87%. He's kept four clean sheets. Conte has referenced him in the last two games, saying that, I don't think it was in their recent win, but the game before that was a 1-0, I think. And he said, yeah, Handanovic kept us in that. And it sort of struck me as that Jan Oblak figure. We saw him make a brilliant save in the Madrid derby, which he later said was, yeah, that's a basic save. I've got to make those. And if we score, so... You start constructing this idea of, like, when you discuss the top five goalkeepers in the world, you can consider it in this almost like Venn diagram of goalkeepers. And you have... So I've just mentioned there, Oblak and Handanovic. Handanovic may be number five at the moment in that ranking, or sort of not approaching the top three, but could be made a case for in that top five. He's alongside Oblak in one side of the Venn diagram. We will save every shot that's given against us. Don't ask us to do too many passes, or don't expect us to do those weak foot assists. But we can guarantee we'll save. As I said, eight or nine out of ten shots.
Crosses, big guys, make big saves. You know, what a Ray Whittaker, proper goalkeeper.
And then, on the polar opposite side, you have your Ter Stegen, and Neuer would potentially go in here, maybe at the moment, given his chaotic nature of his goalkeeping.
And Edison,
who, despite being criticised for a recent... When they drew 2-2 with Spurs, he seemed bizarrely out of position. Lamella scored outside the box. But this season has actually kept Man City in a few games.
I was going to say, the way he got down for that chance against Everton, obviously he's really, really tall, isn't he? That's one of the accusations that always gets thrown at really tall goalkeepers.
I think they struggle to get down. He strikes me as a bit smaller than usual, though, compared to that Oblak and Handanovic.
But he's not small.
He's not small. Most goalkeepers, apart from Pickford, is probably the smallest.
Small arm Jordan, yeah.
But Edison has that, and really good at those 1v1 saves, and obviously you mentioned Edison's kicking.
I mean, Edison had two assists last year, one in the Champions League, one in the Premier League. I mean, you know, they're showing those two goalies, they are you know, the modern paradigm. But at the same time, Oblak and Hanan have shown that you can still be an old school guy as long as you're... You have to play for the right team as well.
Yeah, that's the thing.
The team that wants to play defensively. But if you get one of those teams, you can be an old school goalkeeper. So, I mean, Tom Heaton is the Premier League's answer. Yeah. You know?
Him and Nick Pope both got England call-ups off the back of being an absolute sort of bastion of
Sean Dyche,
clean sheets in the Burnley goal. Yeah. Maybe Burnley should sign Handanovic or Oblak to take them into the next level. But then you have the golden middle at the moment. And despite him being injured last season and obviously cleaned up all of the awards, you would say Alisson is actually the best of both worlds in that.
He's the ideal hybrid because he is he's good with his feet. He's not like De Gea would be in there when De Gea was good. I would argue De Gea was in there as well in this middle round where he's good with his feet. Cajun does some very incredible things with his feet, but he's not like absurdly expressive with his feet. And then he's just rock solid as well. He's like this perfect little hybrid goalie. This is why, I mean, you know, it went from De Gea, the hype in the Premier League went from De Gea straight to Alisson, even though there was a period where, you know, De Gea wasn't they went from De Gea's miracle season to Alisson having a miracle season of his own. So you can see that that's the dream kind of goal that you want, you know, where they can, unless you're an expressive passing team. So, you know, you look at the
point is Alisson plays in any team in Europe, and maybe there's still questions of Oblak's always mentioned as like, oh, sign him if there's a goalkeeper
couldn't
available.
Couldn't play for Barca or Man City, but then Barca, essentially, could De Stegen or Edison play for Liverpool or... Well, maybe Liverpool, but could they pay for, like, you know...
Atletico Madrid.
Yeah, no.
Or Burnley.
Well,
that would be the difference. So,
just staying at Burnley. Let's see it. Let's make it happen, Sean.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the... Oh, maybe whip out a Football Manager sim just to see that, see how many goals he concedes. But that was the thing, is now when considering goalkeepers, you don't even... it's hard to just nail down best in the world, isn't it? Because Ter Stegen, you've made claims, and after his performance at the weekend, you were saying, oh, best in the world. And then we're like, oh, wait, maybe Alisson still.
Yeah.
But... it's almost like, well, you can have a best shot stopper in the world, you can have the best goalkeeper in the world, and you can have the best modern goalkeeper in the world. So there's almost three different subsections when deciding the best goalkeeper. And Ter Stegen is probably in contention for the overall awards him and Edison are maybe competing for that sort of ultimate modern style goalkeeper.
Yeah, I think it comes to a sort of point where you realise when you're ranking things, unless there's someone who's obviously like otherworldly superior, like with Messi, most of the time you just pick a top five, and like any of that top five could be the number one depending on the situation. You know, there's very few people who are just so transcendent you're like, yeah, that guy's the best.
The next player that I wanted to focus on regarding sort of Champions League fixtures, but not actually talking about the Champions League fixtures itself, is Riyad Mahrez. Because on a previous podcast, I mentioned that Roberto Firmino was making a case to be sort of the low-key best player of the season. I still think he's up there. Kevin De Bruyne can't stop assisting goals, so he probably has the actual spot.
Kevin De Beckham.
But Riyad Mahrez keeps playing... and keeps playing absolutely incredibly well when Pep Guardiola is giving him the nod. And I think he might just be sort of the best not guaranteed starter in the world.
Well, we were all saying in 17-18, oh, they're not playing Bernardo Silva. Why aren't you playing Bernardo Silva? And then last season we saw, because he was adapting. Bernardo Silva was learning the system, and then Bernardo Silva hit the Premier League like Mike Tyson in his prime. And last season we were saying, why isn't he playing Mahrez? Why are you playing Mahrez? What are you doing? This season, we're saying, oh, okay, so Mahrez was learning the system. He's come out, look at this season, right? In terms of chances created per 90 minutes, playing a minimum of 270 minutes, which is three games, right? Mm. This season in the Premier League. First is De Bruyne, 4.92. Second is Mahrez, 4.52. In terms of big chances created, again, playing a minimum of 270 minutes per 90 minutes, 1.69, Kevin De Bruyne, number one. 1.13, Riyad Mahrez number two. He's literally only behind De Bruyne in terms of creating chances, creating big chances for the minutes he's on the pitch. He's incredible. He's everything that he was doing too slowly last season, he's now doing much quicker. He's dribbling the ball faster. He's moving it faster. He's more into the positional play. He understands how he can become a protagonist now, whereas before he looked very timid and afraid almost of taking things on. And, you know, like the free kick, for example, took that on, everyone else aside, took it on, bent it in, beautiful goal. you know, gave City the lead. So, you know, and he's playing amazingly. And City needed to play amazing because obviously they've lost the Orozane.
Well, that's what I was going to say is maybe there's a bit of, yes, he was definitely learning. And we saw, I think they picked out in the sort of review afterwards that he was actually tracking back and showing that sort of hunger that Pep Guardiola demands of all his players. But he has been blessed to an extent.
The injury sort of made Guardiola's decision for him.
Yeah. Leroy Sané is not an option. It's not that he's pepped Leroy Sané in the pecking order. It's Leroy Sané is not in the pecking order at the moment because he's injured. Mm. But Riyad Mahrez has now made a case that Leroy Sané does not need to be in the pecking order at all.
This is the thing, isn't it? Now, you look at Sterling, you look at Bernardo Silva, you look at Riyad Mahrez, and you're thinking, once Sané's fit, I mean, they all love Sané, I'm sure they like him, but I'm pretty sure if Bayern Munich come in with 100 million next summer, they'll be like,
In January, he might be fit again.
Yeah, well, I don't know, because in January, you have to then sign someone else, I think, because you can't go all with just three wingers. You need at least one, especially because they're going to have to be a bit top heavy this season, given
that. But then if Pep's saying that he hasn't got the money to reinvest in this centre back that he wants. If they sold Sané in January, then he could immediately spend that money.
They might have to.
Well, I mean, they will have to. Honestly, if Fernandinho is their answer, then they're going to fail this test. They ain't winning three in a row. There's no way. Fernandinho is not a centre back. I mean, we knew that anyway. But like, you know, obviously Pep moved Mascherano to centre, made him a centre back, and was amazing. Mascherano was great. Mascherano was 26. When Pep moved into centre back, he was in the prime of the physical prime of his career, and
in sponge mode as well. Yeah, still learn.
Yeah, and also, you know, again, that Barcelona team had a midfield that controlled players and played at a slower tempo for a large period of time. City still don't do that. City still are just like, okay, we'll recycle the ball for a bit, and then bam, we're going to hit you.
And this is what we said when we spoke about De Bruyne before, about he doesn't necessarily control the tempo of the game, but he's the one that puts it into overcharge.
Yeah, exactly.
So every time they want to go and score, he sprays it out to Mahrez. Mahrez will... His stepovers are the most graceful stepovers in Europe as well. Mahrez's stepover is the most beautiful thing to watch. And the redundancy of all these comments about, you know, he's going to go onto his left. Try and stop Riyad Mahrez getting on his left foot, just like Iron Robin. Because if you ever make a committed movement to show him, he's good enough to be like, okay, I will just use my right. The only reason that all these players get on their left is because they manipulate every single defender
and it's mad.
With these body feints and with these stepovers.
His feints, man, are incredible.
Yeah, he's incredible.
They?
And there's a case with De Bruyne being on that side. Man City have the most creative right half space in the world, I think, at the moment. Because the way those two are now working together with Mahrez absorbing the ball, dribbling, standing defenders up, and then he's just knocking it back into that sort of Beckham area where first time crosses. The goal, obviously, Jesus's goal.
Yeah,
another obscene cross by De Bruyne without even looking.
And it's going to get better because once João Cancelo adapts, you can have João Cancelo bombing on the overlap, who is an incredible attacker. If you watched Juventus last year, there's a reason Man City paid 62 million for João Cancelo. He is, in attack, an undoubted upgrade on Kyle Walker, a massive upgrade on Kyle Walker. If they can get him adapted, they'll have the best right flank in the world.
Yeah.
Forget about it. Mahrez...
and that's with using someone that wasn't even playing last season. Yeah, it's so funny.
They're ridiculous. De Bruyne's crossing is out of this world. I mean, just to go back to De Bruyne very quickly, like, it's just... And it's so good that you watch him the way he went. It is Beckham-esque. It's the best I've seen since Beckham. He looks like Scholes. He plays like Beckham. It's just he's... incredible, and they need him to be because, like I said, their defense is with. I mean, Otamendi was you know, he's an error. I mean, then maybe they should just bring Eric Garcia from the youth team and play him, honestly, or move Kyle Walker there because I think Kyle Walker's not centre back, but he at least has the pace and the energy to sort of play as a covering guy. Fernandinho plays centre back like he played defensive midfielder, which is he constantly runs forward and tries to nick the ball off the players.
That's Arsenal centre back syndrome.
First of all, that's risky as a centre back. Secondly, that's absurd as a centre back if your partner Otamendi does the exact same thing.
Yeah.
You need to have someone a bit more restrained with Otamendi, which is why he works so well with Stones, because Stones doesn't do that. Stones doesn't bomb forward. Stones stands still and reads, which is so having Otamendi and Fernandinho in centre back, there's so much potential for disaster there. Good teams will kill them.
Well, I sort of put Zagreb down as in we didn't need to talk about this game because it's Dinamo Zagreb at the Etihad, but they've returned to the Champions League for I think it's the first time since 2015-16 season where they lost every single game and did not score.
Yeah.
And then last week they scored four goals.
They destroyed Will Hall's Atalanta. So, you know what though? We laugh, but Man City have a lot of similar weaknesses to Atalanta right now in that they can't defend. So I mean, I would imagine City will win, but don't rule out Zagreb scoring a few goals, well, this man.
We mentioned Edison in obviously that goalkeeper's part, but no one's keeping a clean sheet this season, it seems. Fabianski is joint top with three, and he's just out for West Ham. But Edison is not keeping a clean sheet, but still having to make a lot of saves.
Fabianski, interestingly enough, I saw a stat from Opta this morning. He's got he's prevented 11 goals since the start of 18-19, according to expected shots on target against. And that's only Lloris has more since that time period. So they're going to miss him.
You ruined your stat by mentioning Lloris, who...
Yes, that's true.
Turned on his own line.
But he did make some absolute...
You could almost have your best and worst 11 this week of Hugo Lloris first half in the worst and then Hugo second half in the best. Back to Mahrez quickly. I've been tracking him a lot this season just because it's hypnotic watching him on the ball. As I said, one of the most graceful. And when... It was against West Ham, actually, that he had another really good game, the first game of the season. But the VAR controversy and the fact De Bruyne was getting loads of assists meant that he's not talked about as much. But I sort of mentioned then that I think Riyad Mahrez walks into 99% of every other team in Europe. So
PSG and Barcelona, maybe, because of the players they have. But everyone else, I mean, Real Madrid, imagine him in Real Madrid's team with Hazard and like Benzema. Forget about it, man.
So he tramples over. So when I was thinking of this, I was like, Bale's still there.
Yeah, but no. You'd take Mahrez, especially in this one, you'd take Mahrez over Bale.
Yeah, you have to start considering sort of now. But even Bale has been sort of...
He's been
one
okay.
Of their
I'd have Bale still over Mahrez.
If you watched him in the Madrid derby, you wouldn't have Bale over Mahrez. you'd take Mahrez every day.
So, because I didn't get loads of criticism.
Oh, I knew it. Of course, I'm talking about. Yeah, he wouldn't.
Yeah, Mohamed Salah. When I was thinking of the 99%, I was like, well... Man City, obviously not included, so it doesn't really matter anyway. And he doesn't necessarily walk into their 11. he doesn't necessarily walk into his own team's 11. But the only team that I could really think of was when PSG have everyone fit, you're going to play Neymar and Mbappe on the wings unless you could butcher it and put Mbappe up front and Mahrez played right wing. Yeah. But you don't want to do that for the sake of it. Doesn't really explain walking in.
And then you've got Di Maria as well.
Yeah, so Di Maria, who's again, similar sort of player in terms of wanting to use that left foot so much. Yeah. And then, as you said, Barcelona. I was thinking, given sort of the actual form, then
you take him over Suarez, but then it's like, Messi is false nine, but that could work. I mean, I'd like to see that. I'd rather see that than Suarez play anymore. But
And then because when they were trying to get Leroy Sané by Munich, I was always thinking Sané was the one that seemed to be happy at Man City because he was playing so often and was a key part of it and was the reason why Raheem Sterling was getting loads of assists and the reason why my playmaker prediction of Raheem Sterling now looks rubbish because it's just De Bruyne and Mahrez getting assists. But I always thought Bayern Munich, you had Iron Robin who was the ultimate cut-in merchant.
Here's your Algerian Iron Robin.
Yeah, just get Mahrez instead. But they've worked out well. Koeman and Gnabry, as we mentioned, have been performing well and probably a good enough duo to have until they can return for Sané, who was obviously German international, etc. So it makes more sense long term. But it was like Mahrez could be available because I know Pep said he never wants to sell him, but Mahrez should be playing every week because he's this good. Yeah. And if anyone could have given the opportunity to do that, I thought Bayern might have. But alas, they didn't. And thank goodness they didn't, because now we're seeing him in the Premier League every week and he has been absolutely tearing it up. It's a return to that Leicester title winning Mahrez.
It's as well as he's played since then, and that's pretty terrifying considering that he helped Leicester win the Premier League title last time he was playing as well. So now he's playing with City.
And Vardy's playing like he was playing back in that season as well.
Yeah.
and Leicester might be playing just as well as they were to win a title. Unfortunately, they're against a team that has won 7 out of 7 games. So unlike when they did win the league, when it was sort of the best of a not a very good bunch, they're against two of the most elite teams in Premier League history.
It's a bit difficult.
So Brendan Rodgers might not.
Good luck, Brendan.
He has the chance to end Liverpool's win streak, though. Obviously, we can't do a preview for that game.
I mean, Oliver recording Monday. Sheffield United almost ended. I mean, they were brilliant.
They were
really, really good against Liverpool, and they were unlucky. They had a few unlucky bounces. So, I mean...
An unlucky bounce through Dean Henderson's legs, wasn't
Dino,
it?
Dino, what are you doing?
And Chris Wilder was not happy.
You know what? This is why. I mean, I said before the thing. I thought their lack of quality is gonna. They'll see them get relegated. But you know what? I was 100% wrong. Like it's not. They have a lack
of
player quality.
Everyone, get that as a soundbite, please. We can just we can just wheel that one out.
Yeah.
Twice a week.
They're their system is so, they understand it and they believe in it so much and so perfectly. They outplay Liverpool that entire game. I mean, yeah, they get even, it was about even in chances, but you look
Mane
at Liverpool,
should have scored two.
Yeah, Mane should have scored two, but then Sheffield United should have scored as well. They had some very good chances. They were so good, and if they had good players, they'd be pushing top half European places. Their system is so perfect and it's so well constructed. They went man for man against Liverpool at the back, and they shut them down for the most part, with the exception of moments of extreme quality where Liverpool obviously are very good, and then obviously just some sloppy defending on their own part. Chris Wilder, they'll stay up because their system is perfectly calibrated, and if they actually buy some players, like some better players, forget about it, man. That's a serious team. Sheffield United are no joke.
Well, it's like, you know, if you buy players, you also run the risk of them not buying into the system as much.
Well,
why they're all still buying into it is because they've come up together.
Yeah, you need good scouting. Norwich have good scouting. You need good scouting.
They bought quite a few. They broke their transfer record like four times. So all those players seem to have bought
into it. But he's bought them all from the sort of Championship stuff, isn't it? So it's like you'd run the risk if you went, right, I'm going to buy, you know, players from sort of Everton or Everton or Wolves, say, then you might not get the unity.
That's where you hope the recruitment, and that's why recruitment isn't just like, oh, he's got 20 assists this season, let's buy him. It's like, why has he got 20 assists? Can he get 20 assists for us? Does it mean that someone else won't get 20 assists in our team already?
Yeah,
and that's what you hope. That's how you build a team. That's how you scout.
A few years ago, probably a promoted team thinks, oh man, I want to smell Chris Smalling. We'll sign him. He's a good defender. Mm. But like you look at, for example, Sheffield United. You could argue, oh man, I could sign him, but he wouldn't.
Well, they got Jelka.
That's not. Literally because he's a player. I think that's more of a, he's a leader and he's
got ties with United.
Yeah, he's a Sheffield boy. That's a homecoming. So it's I just think you look at Smalling, it's like he's not gonna fit in that system. So they clearly have an understanding of who to buy or who not to buy rather. So you know, and that's really good. That's good. That's a good sign for Championship teams that they're actually getting very savvy. Norwich's recruitment is fantastic. Yeah. I mean, they've got everyone's injured right now.
They just
now.
Need to recruit even more goalkeepers
or physios basically. Yeah. They need some better physio recruitment. But no, it's Sheffield United. I thought was very impressive. I think bringing it back to Leicester. I think they've got a chance because they're very good on the break. Ricardo Pereira is the best right back in the league. Sorry, Trent, maybe.
Sorry, Aaron Wan-Bissaka as well.
He's the best defensive right back.
Venn diagrams.
Isn't it really Wan-Bissaka? He's not good enough with the ball at his feet to qualify for the best overall, I would have said. I would posit. Yeah. You could argue that him and Alexander-Arnold are basically opposite, you know.
Mm,
and then
they are.
And then Ricardo is...
And then Reece James is in the middle.
Ricardo Pereira and Reece James. Hey, let's just make loads of Venn diagrams.
We could. It's actually a really good content idea.
Lucky no one's going to be able to steal it.
Yeah.
Trademark, copyright.
No one listened to this. We are the first to think ever of Venn diagrams as well.
Definitely, that's true.
In fact, where did the word Venn come from? Anyway, we've talked about Liverpool and Sheffield United there. The final piece of this sort of patchwork UCL preview was speaking about Liverpool. So this brings us on nicely to the final part of it. And we spoke about Sheffield United's brilliant performance there, the fact that they matched Liverpool. The reason why Liverpool kept a clean sheet is because Van Dijk won 12 aerial duels and also made the most clearances and was just Van Dijk. But what I found really interesting when I was looking at that game was that this season now, the most aerial duels won in a single game is Van Dijk's 12 versus Sheffield United.
Yeah.
Van Dijk's 12 versus Burnley.
Yeah.
And Joel Matip's 12 versus Newcastle. So Liverpool literally have two mountains at the centre-back. And it got me asking whether they were the best centre-back pairing in Europe. But before I ask you two whether you actually agree, I put this to a poll in response to that incredible Twin Peaks aerial duels stat. And I said, is VVD x Matip the best centre-back pairing in the Premier League? I said, yes, just the Premier League, or yes, the best in Europe, or no, they're not even the best in the Premier League. 44% were yes, just in the Premier League. 34% said yes in Europe, and then 22% said no. But considering some of the comments were Jones and Lindelof, I think people were sort of joking a bit. But the consensus was, I think, that they are definitely the best in the Premier League, because if it was 44% plus 34% for the best in Europe, that's a pretty high percentage.
Yeah.
And certainly one of the best in duos in the air. As I said, statistically, they actually are. Klopp before the Sheffield United game says Joel Matip is one of the best piece of businesses they've done at Liverpool, because of course they got him for absolutely nothing. But I'm sensing some hesitation about them actually being the best, maybe not even in the Premier League.
Well, I think Matip is excellent in the air, and I think in the Premier League that's a very good thing to have. Like, again, we mentioned Chris Smalling at the start of the show. He's very good in the air, and he made his living, he kept his career because he was always good in the air, and when people send crosses into the box, which they do in the Premier League all the time, he's there to clear the ball. So, I mean, he's not necessarily needed now because, you know, I have Maguire, but, you know, Matip is very good in the air, right? And Van Dijk is excellent in the air. Van Dijk's also excellent on the ground. And I think Matip is weak. Not weak, but, like, there's a vulnerability there. Sheffield United exposed it a few times as well with some very intelligent movement. Matip was caught unawares, unbalancing the defensive line. And I just think, I mean, they're playing Salzburg midweek, right?
Yeah.
And that's Erling Haaland, that's Hwang Hee-chan. And those two are incredible. Their movement is amazing. We saw what they did... in the first match, we ripped opponents to pieces. I mean, Liverpool made a much sterner stuff, but it's at Anfield as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, it would be interesting to see, because I do think, I like Matip as a defender. He's good in the air. He's, you know, he's a decent guy. But I think there's a vulnerability. I wouldn't argue that. I wouldn't say they're the best partnership in Europe, because conversely, the best partnership, I think, in Europe, which sounds weird, because I think as individuals, they're both very flawed, is Ramos Varane. Because I think Ramos is a hugely flawed defender, but as a leader, he's really, really exceptional. I've said before, Varane is incredible, but can seem very rudderless when he's on his own. Yeah. Like, if you remember when Real Madrid lost 3-1 to Juventus in 17-18, they went through an away goal at the last minute, Cristiano penalty. Ramos was suspended for that game. I think it was a purposeful yellow card again.
Yeah.
And Varane was on his own with Jesus Vallejo, and Varane lost, had no idea what to do. When Varane's with Umtiti for France, looks amazing. When Varane's with Ramos, looks amazing, and is completely one of the best defenders in the world. And I think as a duo, I think those two, they've got the experience.
I was not
expecting trophies.
You to say that at all.
Yeah, so, well, there you go.
Anything to contest?
I think that's why I can't make my mind up on Matip, because I don't know how much of his form to put down to being alongside Van Dijk, or whether he's actually playing well himself, because I think Van Dijk is so good. I don't know if you put, maybe it's harsh on Phil Jones, but would Phil Jones look so much better if he played alongside Van Dijk? I think his sort of organisation, just what he can bring out from the guy playing next to him.
He had a go at Matip at one point as well. Because Matip is asked a lot, and more than Van Dijk. Van Dijk does those long aerial long balls.
Yeah.
And we saw Mane's chance because of that. But Matip is the one that steps out and passes through the line. So he has a value. Now, this is beyond the defending aspect of it. Matip is actually the one that steps out and looks to break a lines from defence,
which is
a really valuable asset.
It's bad news for Joe Gomez, probably.
Yeah.
Matip's form, because the longer he's in the team and playing like this, then the harder it's going to be for Klopp to bring Gomez back in.
Yeah, you can't. It gets to the point, especially with centre-back partnerships, and we speak about a lot, that it's easy to change a front line because they all offer different things. But from a centre-back partnership, you want
it's strategic as well. That's the thing, because you look at, as I'm going to be saying, Matip's very good in the air. In the Premier League, by and large, Liverpool, the way Liverpool defend, for the most part in the Premier League, is that they force a lot of crosses. They force you wide, make you cross the ball. And then that's where Van Dijk and Matip excels. And because Van Dijk is so good on the ground, that you can almost get away with having, like with Gomez is great on the ground, not so great in the air. Mm. And so it's a bit easier to expose Liverpool in that regard, that way. Whereas because Van Dijk is so good on the ground, I mean, he's good in the air, Van Dijk, but I think he's ridiculous on the ground. He's so good on the ground that it almost, like, you can get away with having Matip, who's a bit weaker on the ground, because Van Dijk is so good there. Whereas in the air, Van Dijk is good, but he's not like, oh my God. You know, he's like...
I think he's still pretty...
He is. No, I mean, the level of oh my God amazingness for Van Dijk. He's like, you know, he's like one Earth atmosphere on in the air. Like, he's like 10 on the ground. Like, he's just ridiculous. You can't get anywhere near
him. One thing to sort of defend Matip getting pulled around positionally a bit was that I'd say is, and this isn't a criticism at all, this is how the Liverpool play.
Yeah.
He defends the side in which Alexander-Arnold vacates. And we watched the Sheffield United-Liverpool game at the weekend. Within 35 minutes, Sheffield United's heat map was blaring flames in that pocket behind the defence, because they were aiming to exploit that space.
Yeah.
And that's why Matip, again, is going to have to head a lot of balls, because if Liverpool, their attack breaks down, teams are aiming to hit them quicker, because once Liverpool get in the shape, then impossible, because Klopp's got them so well drilled. Or they're just doing it to avoid that front press anyway. Mm. So you're doing long balls and you're aiming for that position now, because Robertson is... limitless stamina, so he ended up getting back that side anyway. And Trent is so far forward because he's the one crossing the balls in that there's a lot of space.
Yeah.
And to be fair to Mappit, that is a decision you have to constantly make. Do I go and address that ball that's now vacated and then Van Dijk's left covering it? Or do I sit in and wait for someone to get back? And that's why the midfielders in Liverpool are so important and why Fabinho, again, slowly developing himself as one of the best sort of defensive midfielders in the league because he's the one cleaning up for those balls. So it was just interesting and more of sort of a defence of Matip maybe getting pulled out is because he actually has to make more difficult decisions.
Oh, yeah, he has the harder
job. In terms of descending space.
Of the two, because he, like you say, he's playing on the side of the attacking right back. That's always a harder job. You can ask him for Varane, obviously, did it for Real Madrid with Carvajal. Pique did it for years with Dani Alves. And now Sergio Roberto. It's a harder job than playing on the left, usually where there's a more solid defensive player. But... yeah, I'm not saying Matip is not great. He's very, very good. It's just I think there's
not the best.
Yeah, I think there's I mean, in the Premier League probably because City don't have any fit centre backs, so yeah. There's no one to really rival them. I mean, I like the look of Evans and Soyuncu as a partnership, but that's very young and they've not really done anything yet. I mean Matip and Van Dijk were excellent for Liverpool last year, won the Champions League.
In the Champions League final as well, there was a case to be made that Matip was again. I think Van Dijk got the man of the match. Alisson maybe should have got it. But there was also a case that Matip was better than Van Dijk defensively in that game anyway. But as we said, Van Dijk just is that whole complete package. And when someone's so handsome as well, it's
and
hard
he smells
to
not, nice, remember?
Yeah, Deeney said he smells nice. It's hard not to give him the man of the match. But the final point can Erling Braut Haaland move Liverpool's mountains? You mentioned that their movement, that might be a way to exploit Matip there. Obviously, Haaland coming off the back of a hat-trick in his first Champions League game. Now all the stories are coming out and now everyone knows who he is exactly. Obviously, Leeds-born as well. Links with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Solskjaer keeps saying he's looking for a forward. This is a chance to prove, one, that Salzburg can be a sort of dark horse in the Champions League. His post-match interview afterwards, after getting telling off for giving one-word answers, he actually did say, oh, look, Ajax did really well. We're taking it game by, but it would be really nice to be this season's Ajax.
Yeah,
this is a perfect opportunity to go to a stadium where you're not expected to even get a goal or a point, let alone win, where Salzburg can prove some capabilities. And I'm really fascinated to see Haaland versus Matip and Van Dijk because despite being 19 years old, they will not have come across a much bigger man at the moment. I know they faced Burnley recently and Chris Wood and Ashley Barnes can be a handful, but I think the actual size of Erling Braut Haaland is something that people have not realised.
He's the same size as Ashley Barnes, but he runs like a sprinter. So
but
it's
he's
like,
taller than Ashley. He's the same size as Chris Wood, but runs like a sprinter,
So he's Chris Wood, runs like Dwight McNeil. I mean, you know, that's terrifying, isn't it?
This is the Burnley undertones in this podcast have been...
That's another Venn diagram here.
Yeah, Burnley Venn diagrams. They've not been intentional, but the more Burnley, the better for some people's taste. But that is all we have got time for this week. As I said, remember, these episodes this season have been sponsored by BetWolf. So please make sure to download the app if you are over 18, of course. And finally, just thank you to my guests. Two man strong, but I think we always do well when there's three of us.
we need to
have a word with Will, I think.
we miss the deep dives.
We miss it too. No, it's definitely better to have more. The more the merrier on the score. Squawk Talker podcast for sure. Thank you for joining us, Sam.
Cheers, mate.
And as I said, despite not having to wait long for the next podcast, it will be an agonizing wait for your next episode as we won't be recording this Thursday. We should be returning to Thursday the week after. So I hope you enjoyed your extra little Monday Squawker Talker and we'll speak to you soon.